May the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God and the communion of the Holy Spirit be with you all. This is Father John Zulsdorf, and I'm back with Voices of the Fathers. I recently came across a slim volume, the Austerly Selection from the Latin Fathers, edited by a professor of Heythrop College in Westminster. It was a Jesuit house of formation that eventually closed up in 2004. The book offers 42 brief readings from Fathers of the Church, and it occurred to me that a podcast with an English reading with the Latin and a brief commentary would let you hear the Fathers speak across the centuries. Last time, we had one of the earliest pieces of Christian Latin, the Acts of the Chilitan Martyrs, about 180 AD in North Africa, and this time, we also have juridical acts, also from North Africa, but this time about the martyrdom of St. Cyprian of Carthage, extremely important early bishop. In a nutshell, the martyrdom of St. Cyprian recounts that the bishop of Carthage, Cyprian, he was bishop from 248 to 258, and he had survived the persecution by the Emperor Dacius by going on the run. And then when he died in 251, he came back. But some years later, a new persecution broke out under the Emperor Valerian in 257, and Cyprian was arrested and sent into exile. And later, he was brought back to Carthage and put on trial in 258, and he was put to death by the sword. In the scene of his martyrdom, as we are told by the deacon Pontius and his life of Cyprian, was in a valley surrounded by wooded hills on the estate of someone by the name of Sextus. And some of the spectators climbed trees when they couldn't see over the size of the crowd, and they brought cloths to dip in his blood and so forth. Cyprian, however, is one of the most important episcopal witnesses of the third century. His theology was cold-forged, maybe hot-forged in persecution, and his blood sealed the deal. In Cyprian, we have someone in whom doctrine and discipline and martyrdom converge in a single powerful testimony. One great author about Fathers of the Church, J.N.D. Kelly, said about Cyprian that no Latin father before Augustine exercised so decisive an influence on Western ecclesiology as Cyprian. He helped to form the church's theology about the church, ecclesiology. So we have his full name, Thascius Cacilius Cyprianus, was born into a wealthy pagan family in North Africa. He was trained as a rhetor. He converted to Christianity as an adult, and therefore giving up all of his fortune and his career to serve the church, a common pattern. He was elected bishop of Carthage around 249, just before the persecution of Dacius that I mentioned, and almost immediately he faced a terrible series of crises about what to do about confessors, martyrs, and the lapsi, those who had lapsed under pressure during the time of persecution. Now, this persecution under Valerian was systematic, and it was targeted and aimed chiefly at the church's leadership rather than at the general Christian population. His first edict ordered that bishops and priests and deacons should perform the pagan sacrifice or face exile. All Christian assemblies were forbidden. And then another edict escalated the penalties. Clergy who refused were to be executed. And senators and equestrians, those of higher rank in the Christian population, would be stripped of their rank and property, and Christian women of status were to be banished. And so he basically, what he's trying to do is literally decapitate the church institutionally. And it was during this persecution that St. Cyprian, after his exile, was condemned and murdered. Cyprian's legacy is one of great clarity about the nature of the church. He has a work called De Unitate Ecclesiae, concerning the unity of the church, in which he accounts the articulates that the principle that the church is one and visible and gathered in communion around the bishop. He says, "Habere iam non potest Deum patrem, qui ecclesiam non habet matrem." He who does not have the church as his mother cannot have God as his father. And so it's very concrete. You have to be in communion with the church. And during his exile, Cyprian used letters in order to stay in concrete touch with his flock, insisting on discipline, but also mercy towards those who had caved in during persecution. They were to be reconciled. And of course, you know, this is a rather, you know, difficult way to govern the Lapsi. Something about them. See, in the third century, these public acts had to be made, like offering incense or swearing an oath by the emperor's genius, and this expressed in a public way your desire to maintain what they thought was the Pax Deorum, the peace of the gods, that harmony between the state and the gods, which was kind of a contractual relationship, sometimes summarized as do ut des, I give so that you will give, right? To keep that contractual relationship going. And so they regarded the people who would not make these public acts of worship as being treasonous. They were doing something against the state. But Christians, of course, those acts were irreligious. I mean, they were pagan things. They couldn't do that. So Christians obviously were between a rock and a very hard spot. And, of course, some of them caved in, and they were called the lapsed, or the Lapsi. And they, under pressure of persecution, they renounced the faith by sacrificing to pagan gods or by obtaining libelli, which means little books, a certificate attesting that they had done so. And these people in the church, especially as the persecution died down, posed a real problem. Were they to be readmitted to communion? And if so, on what terms? Cyprian determined to reject the extremes, that is, on the one hand, immediate and unconditional restoration, or on the other hand, permanent exclusion. So he insisted on a middle path of repentance, public penance, and then reconciliation through the authority of the bishop. Of course, Cyprian himself was put to this test. As I mentioned, under Valerian, he was first exiled, and then he was tried by the proconsul Galerius Maximus in 258, and when ordered to sacrifice to the Roman gods, he replied, "Non faccio," I won't do it. And he was sentenced to death by the sword. So Cyprian, one of the things that he gave as a legacy, apart from his dignified witness as a bishop to dying according to the way he'd lived, was to provide the Latin Church, also in his writings, with a coherent vocabulary for talking about ecclesial unity and the episcopal authority and sacramental discipline. He insisted that the church is visibly one and gathered around the bishop, and that's foundational for Latin ecclesiology, especially when issues of, you know, schism and reconciliation and communion come up. Great writer on the early church, Henry Chadwick, said of Cyprian that he gave to the Latin church a clarity of structure and a firmness of discipline which it never lost. St. Augustine of Hippo, Hippo being not very far from Carthage, Augustine was often in Carthage, in North Africa, was strongly influenced by Cyprian, particularly during the Donatist controversy that he faced. Augustine repeatedly drew upon Cyprian to argue that the holiness of the church does not depend on the moral purity of her ministers, and that schism wounds charity and unity, even when it stresses discipline. So in this way, Cyprian helped shape the Catholic understanding of the church as simultaneously both holy and also composed of sinners who need mercy. Benedict XVI had a series of general audiences about fathers of the church, and he had one, of course, on St. Cyprian, and he said of him, Cyprian was a bishop who thought and acted with the church and for the church. He taught that there is no salvation outside the church because there is no salvation outside Christ, and the church is his body. Something which I think maybe some bishops could be reminded of today. Now, I'm going to read this for you. I'll read you in English translation, and so you can get the flow into your ears, and then I'll read it in Latin. A few notes about the Latin. I'm going to use the classical pronunciation because it's still pretty early in the game. It's possible in North Africa that, you know, some consonants and vowels were already shifting, but, you know, just exactly where they were, I don't know. So I'm not all that used to reading in the classical style, but we'll give it a shot. There are a few things you can listen for. They'll be in the English and then, of course, in the Latin. But just to get these into your head first, you'll hear a reference to the Sauciolum, in Atrio Sauciolo in the Latin. We don't know exactly what that was. It was maybe some sort of administrative building, but eventually it made its way into judicial parlance, certainly from the Acts of Cyprian, we're about to hear, as a place of execution. You'll hear the proconsul ask if Cyprian is a papa, like pope, but that word at that time was used generically for a bishop. Some Eastern churches, I think, still do that now. You'll hear about kairimoniari, like almost like sounds like masters of ceremonies or something like that. But it's used only in these acts, and I think once or twice when it's quoted by Augustine, and it basically means acts of religion rather than guys who go around guiding the ceremonies of mass or something. A lacerna bureau. Oh, I did it. Now, see, I did it in ecclesiastical Latin. Lacerna bureau. Two words for about the same kind of thing, a kind of a cloak, probably red from the Greek etymology of burus, like Greek purus. A dalmatic is mentioned, dalmatica. It's a tunic-like garment, but it's not yet used liturgically. It was a common garment. The Emperor Commodus used to wear a dalmatic when he went to start chariot races. You'll hear about manualia, and these are not manuals like trying to figure out, you know, how to put together something from IKEA. These are handkerchiefs. You think about handkerchiefs, manualia. So it has to do with something you hold, a cloth you hold in your hand, and they would use these to collect the blood of martyrs and to save it. The Via Mappaliensis was obviously some place or road near Carthage, and it might, according to some early archaeologists in the 20th century, apparently they found a church with seven naves that was part of a cemetery, and it may be the basilica that was raised over Cyprian's grave, so maybe somewhere close to where Cyprian was martyred. So let's plunge into our reading of the act of the martyrdom of Saint Cyprian. And so on the next day, the 18th before the calends of October, that's the 14th of September, a large crowd gathered at Sextus' place in the morning according to the order of the proconsul Galerius Maximus. And so on the same day, the proconsul Galerius Maximus ordered Cyprian to be brought to him while he was sitting in the court of Sauciolus. And when he had been brought forth, the proconsul Galerius Maximus said to the bishop Cyprian, "Are you Thascius Cyprianus?" The bishop Cyprian answered, "I am." The proconsul Galerius Maximus said, "Have you acted as bishop to these sacrilegious men?" The bishop Cyprian answered, "I have." The proconsul Galerius Maximus said, "The most sacred emperors have ordered these religious acts." The bishop Cyprian said, "I won't do it." Galerius Maximus said, "Take counsel." Bishop Cyprian replied, "Do as you have been commanded. In such a just matter, there is no consultation." Galerius Maximus, having conferred with the consul, delivered the sentence reluctantly in these words, You have lived with a sacrilegious mind against the gods, and have gathered many men in a wicked conspiracy, and have made yourself an enemy of the Roman gods and sacred religion. And neither the pious and most sacred princes Valerian and Gallienus, Augustus, nor the most noble Valerian, Caesar, were able to pull you back to the right path of their acts of religion. And therefore, since you are the author and signatory of the most heinous crimes, you yourself will be a lesson to those whom you have gathered with you by your crime. Discipline will be enacted by your blood. And having said this, he recited the decree from the tablet. It is pleasing to see Thascius Cyprianus put to the sword. Bishop Cyprian said, Thanks be to God. After this sentence, the crowd of the brethren said, And we will be beheaded with him. Because of this, a great commotion arose among the brethren, and a great crowd followed him. And so Cyprian himself was led out into the field of Sextus, and there he stripped himself of his robe and his cloak, and bowed his knees to the ground, and prostrated himself in prayer to the Lord. And when he had stripped himself of his dalmatic, and given it to the deacons, he stood on the line, and began to wait for the executioner. But when the executioner came, he ordered his men to give him 25 gold pieces. Linens and handkerchiefs were set before him by the brethren. Afterwards, blessed Cyprian blindfolded his eyes with his own hands. But since he could not tie them with his own hands, Julian the presbyter and Julian the subdeacon bound them for him. Thus blessed Cyprian passed away, and his body was placed nearby because of the curiosity of the Gentiles. From there, during the night, it was taken away with candles and wax torches to the altar of the procurator Macrobius Candidianus, which is on the Via Mapaliensis near the pools, and was conducted with great vows and triumph. A few days later, however, the proconsul Galerius Maximus died. Et ita altera die, octava decima calendarum octobrium, mane multa turba convenit ad sexti secundum praeceptum Galerii Maximi proconsulis. Et ita idem Galerius Maximus proconsul eadem die Cyprianum sibi offeri praecepit in atrios auciolo sedenti. Cumque oblatus fuisset, Galerius Maximus proconsul Cyprianu episcopo dixit, Tu es Thascius Cyprianus? Cyprianus episcopus respondit, Ego sum. Galerius Maximus proconsul dixit, Tu papam te sacrilegae mentis hominibus praebuisti? Cyprianus episcopus respondit, Ego. Galerius Maximus proconsul dixit, Iuserunt te sacritissimi imperatores caerimoniarii. Cyprianus episcopus dixit, Non facio. Galerius Maximus ait, Consule tibi. Cyprianus episcopus respondit, Fac quod tibi preceptumst. In re tam justa nulla est consultatio. Galerius Maximus, collocutus cum concilio sententiam vixer aegre verbis uiusmodi. Dius sacrilegamente vixisti, et plurimos nefariae tibi conspirationis homines aggregasti, et inimicum te diis Romanis et religionibus sacris constituisti, nec te pii et sacritissimi principes Valerianus et Gallienus Augusti et Valerianus nobilissimus Caesar ad sectam caerimoniarum suarum revocare potuerunt. Et ideo, cum sis nequisimorum criminum auctor et signifer deprehensus, eris ipse documento his quos scelere tuo tecum aggregasti, sanguine tuo sancietur disciplina. Et his dictis, decretum ex tabella recitavit, Thascium Cyprianum gladio animadverti placet. Cyprianus episcopus dixit, Deo gratias. Post hanc vero sententiam turba fratum dicebat, et nos cum ipso decollemur. Propter hoc tumultus fratrum exhortus est, et multa turba eum prosecut, et ita idem Cyprianus in agrum sexti productus est, et ibi, se lacerna biro expoliavit, et genu in terra flexit, et in orationem se domino prostravit. et cum se dalmatica expoliasset et diaconibus tradidisset, in linea statit et cepit speculatorem sustinere. Cum venisset autem speculator, iusit suis ut eidem speculatori viginti quinque aureos dat lindeamina vero et manualia a fratribus ante eum mitebantur. Postea vero Beatus Cyprianus manu sua oculos sibi texit, qui cum lacineas manualias ligare sibi non potuisset, Julianus presbiter et Julianus subdiaconus ei digavero. Ita Beatus Cyprianus passus est, eiusque corpus propter quintilium curiositatem in proximo positumst. Inde per noctem sub latum cum ceriis et scolacibus ad aram macrobii candidiani procuratoris, quae sunt in via Mappaliensi juxta piscinas, cum voto et triumpho magno deductumst. Post paucos, autem dies, Galerius Maximus proconsul decessit. Thus ends the Acts of the Martyrdom of St. Cyprian. There was no theatrical defiance here, and no melodrama, just as in the other acts that we heard last time. Cyprian died as a bishop should live, obedient to God, conscious of the church and his role in the church, and he should be at peace, and he should be at peace because his life is given over to Christ. Cyprian's calm replies in front of the proconsul reveal, in fact, a life totally given over to Christ. Cyprian himself had written in De Unitate Ecclesiae, "Esse martyr non potest qui in ecclesia non est." He cannot be a martyr who is not in the church. Never can one come to the kingdom who abandons her who is destined to reign. So, 2 points on that. First of all, a note I'd pay attention to those who want to put a halo on Martin Luther King Day. Today's on Martin Luther King. It's his day today, a public holiday, or on a Che Guevara or someone like that. No, you can't truly be a martyr if you're not in the church. And if you abandon the church, you can never come to the kingdom. It's another way of saying there is no salvation outside the church. So those who want to defy the church by placing themselves outside the church's authority just because there are some bad actors in the church and best examine their future fate. In any event, no matter what persecutions may come, the church will reign, and that Cyprian makes clear. And his own death verifies his words. As a bishop, he offered his blood for the unity that he defended. So the act of the martyrdom of Cyprian reminds us that true Christian martyrdom is not an interruption of life, but it's rather its consummation, because the church holds that in that moment the Christian martyr manifests in a heroic manner all the Christian virtues. That's one of the reasons why in causes for beatification, the martyrs, they don't have to demonstrate that the martyr lived a life of heroic virtue, because in the very martyrdom itself, all the virtues are present. Cyprian teaches us that fidelity, patiently lived, is already a form of witness, and that when required in this life, fidelity may require everything. So thank you for your attention if you made it this far. This is Father John Zolsdorf. Please pray for me as I will for you.